The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although she died in 1817 when she was just 41, over 200 years later, Jane Austen's influence continues to be felt, not only in the world of literature, but in movies, TV, and many other parts of popular culture. Yet, how much do we actually know about the author of such iconic works as Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice? The Morgan Library and Museum has mounted an exhibit of over 100 pieces that include her manuscripts, personal letters, and other materials. It's called A Woman's Wit and runs through March 14th. I'm delighted that it brings Declan Keeley and Clara Drummond, the show's organizers, to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
So how would you explain Jane Austen's enduring appeal?
I would just start it by saying she's a fantastic storyteller. She creates great characters that, especially in the major novels, not so much in the juvenilia, but are incredibly complex. You know, they're not one-dimensional. And you sort of can see her characters and recognize the people around you. And she really was describing, you know, sort of a small community of people, not necessarily based on the people she knew, but certainly drawn from the kind of experience and people she knew.
And it may be the reason that people have found it so easy to modernize her with films like Clueless.
Yes. It's that palpable realism, I think, that people connect to when they read Austen. The struggles that her characters are struggling with, you know, finding love, finding a good marriage, leading a good life. They're things that, you know, we all go through at some point.
Now, she wrote quite a bit, and yet isn't she still something of a mystery?
She is, amazingly so, considering she's, you know, remains one of the most popular classic authors.
Is it because the record that she left behind is incomplete?
It is incomplete.
Do we know what she looked like?
That's a very good question. Hardly. Her sister Cassandra, who at the Morgan, the majority of the letters that we have are from Jane to Cassandra. So Cassandra was just 2 years older and they were very close. So her sister Cassandra did draw a portrait of her. And it's really the only portrait from life that we have. And Cassandra wasn't a professional artist, so it isn't, you know, remarkable. And she looks very serious. Her face, her lips are sort of pursed. And so it's all later depictions of her are based on that. So. And family members actually comment that they don't think the Cassandra portrait is that good.
So we don't know.
No, we don't. And that, like Clara said, that's the only portrait that survives.
And I assume we have to conjecture a lot about what she was thinking based on the writings. Because here she wrote an awful lot about people getting married or going through the courting process, and she never got married herself.
No, and the thing, the sort of big biographical absence in Austen's life is because so few of the letters survive. Scholars think she wrote probably 3,000 letters in the course of her life, and only 160 of those letters survive today.
Do we know why? Were they not valued at the time?
We think that Cassandra destroyed most of them, and I think you're right. I think family members probably didn't value them as much as we would today, as we do today. None of the letters to her brother Henry survive, and that was a very close relationship in various ways, as close as she was to Cassandra, but they have disappeared too.
So what do we know about her? How much education did she have?
She had very little formal education. Her family did send her away when she was quite young with Cassandra's to a kind of boarding school, but it was more of an etiquette school than a, you know, she was sort of not reading Shakespeare there. She was learning how to be a proper woman dancing. And so that was only for brief periods of time.
And she writes about that sort of thing,
right,
in her novels.
Exactly. And so mostly she was self-taught, and she, you know, she grew up in a family with one sister and six brothers, and her father at one point in his rectory ran a school for boys. So he was very open to the daughters reading from his library. I mean, he didn't close off anything to her, but largely self-taught.
Did he encourage her to write? Did her mother encourage her to write?
Yes, her mother wrote poetry, and it was a family of writers, really. The brothers wrote as well, and they wrote short plays that they put on there at Stevenson.
Well, I wonder what happened when she wrote. Did they recognize the fact that there was real genius there? How did she compare to her contemporaries?
I think Henry did. Henry believed in her, and her father believed in her too, and both her father and Henry were both great advocates for her and took on the kind of business dealings. I mean, Henry was almost like an agent for her. But again, we don't know. It's not really until 1869 that her nephew wrote a memoir of Jane Austen that you really begin to hear what the family made of it at all. And of course, that's all filtered through the nephew, who was a child and young man when Austen was alive.
There's a lot of conjecture about her sexuality, for example.
Yeah.
Why she never married.
I mean, she does speak in the letters. We don't have the famous letters that Tom Lefroy, so the film Becoming Jane, that looked into this flirtation she had with this Irishman. We actually don't have those letters. But in the letters to Cassandra, we see moments where she mentions, you know, dancing with specific boys at dances and, you know, having small crushes on them. There was a marriage proposal. Again, we don't get this from Jane herself, but family members record that some family friends, a younger brother, had asked her to marry. She said yes the night before, and the next morning changed her mind.
Does her personality come through in the letters?
Definitely.
Would I be able to read them at the exhibit?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Her handwriting clear enough?
Yeah, she had a clear hand.
Well, to be fair, we're sort of more used to writing, 18th century, 19th century handwriting, but she is extremely clear. Mm-hmm. A very clear and steady hand. People always ask us, it looks like she was using a ruler. The lines are so straight. But she wasn't. It was just practice. I mean, again, if you wrote that much every day, letters, but also manuscripts, I think you would be very skilled at handwriting.
We have one letter where she begins by saying, I apologize for the shakiness of my hand in this letter. I think I drank too much wine last night. But even that letter with a shaky hand is pretty readable, in our opinion.
Well, how much can you learn about her from reading these letters?
Well, you get a really good sense of her personality, I think, because she's really unbuttoned in these letters to Cassandra. And really the best word for it is malice. You know, there's some acid in these letters, in the way that she describes people. And if you go to the exhibition, you'll see that several of the letters have chunks cut out of them. So as well as destroying large numbers of letters, Cassandra also expurgated individual letters, and you'll see a line here and there. Clara, can talk about some of those funny examples.
Yeah, they've only cut out sort of part of the sentence. So the sentence will start, Edward is quite, Edward was one of her brothers, and the rest is gone. So it's clearly she was saying something nasty about the brother, and Cassandra, for whatever reason, felt that it was inappropriate for him to read. But very funny that they leave Edward as quite.
Mm-hmm. although when you read the novels, you realize she had that kind of sensibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She could be sharp about the characters that she created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's one great quotation in the letters. Mr. Waller is dead. I don't miss him much at all, nor does his widow, perhaps. So again, that kind of sharpness.
My guests are Clara Darmond, assistant curator of literary and historical manuscripts at the Morgan Library and Museum. That's at Madison Avenue and 36th Street. And Declan Keeley, who is a Robert H. Taylor curator. We're talking about an exhibit called A Woman's Wit, about the life and legacy of Jane Austen, that runs through March 14th. And you had a reason for choosing that title.
We did.
Is the wit what comes through in everything that we see?
It was. When we were thinking of themes, that really was sort of, and we're thinking about her voice, so not only her voice in the novels, but the voice on the page, the letters, so the very personal voice, that was the thing that struck us as a kind of unifying theme for the whole exhibition, that you can see the physical form of that wit.
Was it hard to put this exhibit together? I remember going to the Jane Austen house, and there was a sign up saying, please do not knock. I had the feeling that even today there's a certain reluctance to share things.
Well, the Morgan Library exists to share things, so it was actually a pretty easy exhibition to put together, in as much as the Morgan has the largest collection of Jane Austen manuscripts in the world. We have 51 of those surviving 160 letters. We have the only complete draft of any of her novels, Lady Susan, which she wrote in 1794 or 5.
So that's very early.
Very mm-hmm. early. It's Juvenilia, and what we have is a fair copy that she wrote out probably for attempted publication in 1805.
And that was never published in her lifetime.
No.
It wasn't.
Is it any good?
Yeah, we love it.
Yeah.
It's got this great heroine, Lady Susan Vernon, is both wicked and enchanting.
Yes.
And one of her kind of best creations, I think.
Yeah, and desperate to get herself and her daughter married off.
So it's the same themes. Why wasn't it published? Is it just not as good as the others?
We don't know why it wasn't published. And the fact that she copied it out later in life suggests perhaps she was thinking of submitting it for publication, or maybe she was just sharing it with family members. But for whatever reason, it never made it to publication during her lifetime.
And then you have The Watsons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Another book I had not heard of until mm-hmm. now.
We have a fresh
one. This is the book she was working on when she died?
No, she probably abandoned the Watsons in about 1805, around the time of her father's death. She was writing it in Bath, probably began it around 1803. And what we have on display is a 12-page fragment, but it's a wonderful manuscript because it shows Austen's creative process, and they are very heavily revised pages. And I suspect if we... had the manuscripts of any, and I say we, I mean none of the manuscripts of her novels survive, and if we had them, I think they would look like the Watson's fragment.
Were her works popular during her lifetime?
She was not rich. She did not make it as an author during her lifetime. They were popular in a small circle of people who knew them, and all of the novels were published anonymously during her lifetime.
So because she was a woman?
Partly, yeah, modesty. She was a woman. The first, Sense and Sensibility, the first one to be published in 1811, said by a lady. So, and the rest said by the author of Sense and Sensibility. So she wasn't widely known, and we know that she didn't make a lot of money compared to Fanny Burney, mm-hmm. Maria Edgeworth, other Sir Walter Scott. So other authors during her time were much more popular and widely read.
And some of her books were published posthumously.
Yes.
Persuasion, mm-hmm. Northanger Abbey.
Exactly. Those manuscripts were left behind, and Cassandra, yes, and Henry sort of, you know, gathered them together and submitted them for publication.
Why did she die? She was so young, 41.
Well, there's a new theory that came out late last year that she may have contracted bovine TB, tuberculosis. The symptoms, you know, would support that, what we know of the symptoms. But for decades, really since the 50s, the theory was that she died of lymphoma or Addison's disease. Which at that time, I mean, it's something that you can treat now, but it's in that time, of course, it was fatal.
It was a pain. I mean, it seems like it was a painful mm-hmm. death, and she was sick for the last year or so of her life. So
now, she was a great writer, but great writers are usually still writers of their times. How does she fit in with the literature of her times?
Well, we speak in the exhibition about an 18th century frankness that she has. So as opposed to sort of when you think of the Victorian time, so very proper, again, that wit fits in with, you know, she speaks very clearly about the people, you know, in the characters that she creates. And so I think that's one way in which she fits in with her time. And of course, you know, she was a woman living in a time when it was difficult to be a woman. And while her women characters are very strong, they obviously also have certain constraints because of the time. And again, if you were an unmarried woman, she says it's very difficult to be an unmarried woman and to be poor. That was basically your fate. So again, you know, the novels are of her time.
It is interesting that the exhibit features comments about her by 20th century writers, and they're all men: Vladimir Nabokov, William Butler Yeats, Rudyard Kipling. So they recognize something about her as a great writer.
Yes. One of the things we were struck by when we were doing research for this, because neither I nor Clara are Austen specialists, you know, we're generalists really, was that Austen was appreciated so much by male authors and in many cases political figures. I was intrigued to learn that both Churchill, Harold Macmillan, you know, other Disraeli in the 19th century all loved Jane Austen's work.
A couple of those were writers themselves.
That's true, yes.
And you have a documentary film at the end of the exhibit with quite an eclectic number of people, from Fran Lebowitz to Combe Troy Bean to Cornel West.
Yes. We wanted to be sort of surprising. Again, we didn't want to make a film just of Austen scholars speaking about Austen. And these are all sort of great readers of Austen, but sort of unexpected. When you see them in the film, who would know that Cornel West was such a great fan of Austen? But, you know, very eloquent, and just speak about her influence and also about the encounter with manuscripts, you know, what it means to see a great author's manuscripts and what you can learn from them.
We, by the way, have a slideshow on our show page and a complete schedule of upcoming events at the Morgan, which includes lectures and discussions. And Wednesday there'll be a preview of Masterpiece Classics Emma with the producer.
Yes.
Now, a lot of films have been made of her work. Do you think that most of them capture the spirit, or would she be like so many writers today and say, well, I sold the rights, and that's what filmmakers do?
Some she would be more pleased with than others.
She would
I
love
think.
Clueless.
Yeah, I think she would.
I think she would have loved Persuasion, at least the more recent Persuasion with Karen Hines. And who else was in that? Anyway, I thought that was quite
very well done.
Quite accurate.
Yes.
You'll be screening the 1940 version of Pride and Prejudice with Laurence Olivier and Greer Garson on Saturday, January 24th at 2, but also Ang Lee's Sense and Sensibility with Emma Thompson on February 17th. And Clara, you're going to be giving a talk as well on February 26th?
A gallery talk where we talk specifically about objects and just learn a little more about the behind-the-scenes creating.
When we did our first gallery tour in November, on November 20th, we had about 150 people in the gallery.
We were
shocked.
Yeah. It really showed her popularity that people would come out.
Well, and I'm sure the exhibit is doing quite well. The Morgan is a wonderful place to see everything. And this exhibit is called A Woman's Wit, about the life and legacy of Jane Austen. It runs through March 14th. My great thanks to Clara Drummond, assistant curator, library and historical manuscripts at the Morgan Library and Museum, and Declan Keeley, the Robert H. Taylor curator. The museum is at Madison Avenue and 36th Street.
Thank you.
Thank you.